My word. Panel game devised by Tony Schrein and Edward J. Mason. Dennis Powell and Frank Muir challenged Catherine Whitehorn and Dennis Norden in a game about words, with Jack Longland in the chair.
Today our programme comes from the Conversazione of the University of London, and we go straight into the first round, which tests the respective vocabularies of the teams. For 2 marks, what's the dictionary meaning of these words? And we begin with Frank Muir. Frank, yours is mumbo-jumbo.
It's a kind of... It's a name given to a Boeing 747 of an emergent African nation.
Well, 1 mark so far for effrontery.
Well, because they would fly over and they'd worship it.
Yes, now you're getting
there. As big shiny bird with spiral staircase and 3 films. And they'd worship it, and therefore it would be called a mumbo jumbo, which is a thing worshipped unreasonably.
Yes, I think that'll do. A bogey or grotesque idol worshipped or venerated originally by certain African tribes, and therefore an object, as you say, of unreasoning worship. There is a dissenting voice from Mr. Mungo Park, the great traveller, who says it was a husband disguised as a bogey to frighten his disagreeable wives. So he comes in with his pals, making a quite intolerable noise, terrifies all the wives, picks out the ringleader, and beats her. So you're left with a choice of explanations of this word mumbo-jumbo. Would you get your 2 marks? Catherine Whitehorn, a philuminist. Philuminist. Philuminist.
Well, it ought to be somebody who belongs to the Festival of Light, oughtn't it? But I don't think it is. notice in this academic gathering we have an empty seat in the front row, and I can only suppose that what's happened to you is what happened to the English master in Evelyn Waugh's school, who left to become jokes editor to a matchbox firm.
Yes, you're getting there.
Is it somebody who collects matchboxes, perhaps?
It's not necessarily the box itself, Catherine.
Well, perhaps the labels will do.
That's it. It's a collector of, or somebody who's very knowledgeable about, the labels on matchboxes. Well done, 2 marks. Now, Dennis Norden. Dennis, to nictitate, nictitate, or it can be, for simplicity's sake, nictate instead.
I'm all doing it simply. I have an idea this is a bodily function.
Yes.
Disgusting.
Yeah. Well, you're already in trouble when you say bodily function.
It's a very small movement, Dennis.
Rather towards... Is it a small movement above the waist?
Very much towards your... very much towards your upper end.
Above the waist being the only place where life does begin at I really don't know what this is.
Lizards and some birds do it.
Do it, yeah. Even educated fleas do it.
I don't think they do.
Well, do they stick... Lizards, all I know about lizards, they stick their tongue out very quickly and put it back again.
Just a little higher up.
Just a little higher up. They... Oh, good. Blink.
Yes.
Catherine says they blink.
She's quite right.
Or sneeze, she added, but I won't mention.
you need to split on her about that one.
Yeah.
No, it is to close and open the eyes, and that is to wink. Yeah. Usually, among naturalists, it's what they call the nictitating membrane, which is the third or inner eyelid of birds and of certain other animals. 1.5. Tell us, Paul. Lanolin, which can be spelled either with an E at the end or without it, and L-A-N-O-L-I-N. What really is it?
Must be something to do with the wool of sheep.
Yes, and what?
The isle. The isle from the wool of sheep.
I think that's absolutely good enough. 2 marks. It's the fatty matter, which I'm told, as this learned audience, is a mixture of palmitate, oleate, and stearate of cholesterol that is extracted from sheep's wool for use in ointments. It's also called C27H450H.
But not often.
2 marks in case I forgot. Well, for those who like to guess ahead at the stories, what's your quotation, Frank, for later on in the programme?
My quotation is from Abraham Lincoln, who said, you may fool all of the people some of the time, or you can fool some of the people all of the time, but you can never fool all the people all the time.
Well, I think this program...
goes on a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah. If that were true, I think this program would stop, but never mind. Well, yours, Dennis.
Well, mine's nothing like as lofty as that. Mine comes from Shakespeare, from the epilogue of King Henry IV, Part 2, and it's, Falstaff shall die of a sweat. I never heard it before, either.
Well, now we come on to round two, and this dips lightly into Palgrave's golden treasury. 2 marks if you can complete the verse or stanza which I'm going to start. And we begin again with Frank Muir. And I hope we won't take this personally, Frank. Shall I compare thee to a summer's day?
Thou art more lovely and more temperate.
Yes.
Rough winds do shake the darling buds of May. And summer's
lease.
Is too short of...
All too short of day.
Well, I'll tell you the gist. I'll give you the gist.
That's fair enough.
The gist is that summer is very beautiful. A summer's day is very beautiful, but by its nature, ephemeral. Mm-hmm. But his or her beauty is eternal.
Fair enough. It's Sonnet 18, so it's his and not her. Shakespeare. 2 marks. Catherine Whitehorn, far from the madding crowd's ignoble strife.
It's Gray's Elegy,
yep.
Isn't it? I think I have to begin at the beginning. It's one of these ones. They kept the even tenor of their way.
That's right, it's near enough. Yes.
Gray's Elegy in the Country too.
Noiseless,
that's right.
Noiseless. Oh.
Yeah, that's, have you ever heard a noiseless tenor?
Yeah. I think that's good enough.
That's good enough. Yeah.
Good luck. Their sober wishes never learnt to stray. Along the cool, sequestered veil of life, they kept the noiseless tenor of their way. And as Dennis quite rightly says, it's not something you don't hear in the ring, as it were. Too much. Dennis Norton himself. She walks in beauty like the night.
Of cloudless climes and starry skies, and all that's best of dark and bright is in her aspect and her eyes.
Absolutely right, except it's meat in her eyes. Thank you all very much.
Byron,
Hebrew Melodies. 2 marks. Dennis Powell, the glories of our blood and state.
Something things.
Yes.
A P.G. Woodhouse, that, isn't it?
Are something insubstantial things.
That's right, Nelly. The glories of our blood and state are shadows, not substantial things. There is no armor against fate. Death lays his icy hand on kings. Scepter and crown must tumble down, and in the dust be equal made with the poor crooked scythe and spade. It's Shirley, Death the Leveller in Palgrave Orbit. The contention of Ajax and Ulysses. On our round of origins and derivations, and for 2 marks again, how did the following words or phrases originate, or from what did they derive? Frank Muir, a buffoon.
It's a naked bassoonist.
But it could be.
Well, it could be.
It could be.
A buffoon is a man who plays the fool.
Yes.
Fools about. A jester. A jester of a fairly sort of coarse nature.
Absolutely right. Buffare in Italian, to puff out the cheeks, and that in turn produces, as Frank rightly said, buffone, one who jests and makes a ridiculous explosion by puffing out his cheeks and then letting all the air out. It may come also, because buffer, quite rightly he says, means a jest, it may possibly come from the Latin buffo, a toad. Catherine Whitehorn, and this is rather like it, to strip to the buff.
Well, I know what it means. I mean, I'm not going to demonstrate here and now. But, oh, wait a minute. Is this a question of peeling off the selvage and getting a raw edge in dressmaking?
It's more like getting a smooth edge. I don't think edge isn't helping you very much, Catherine.
No, I didn't think it was.
Because
it was worth a try.
If only when people say strip to the waist, we always assume that it means downwards. There's really no reason, is there? Because everything else, you start, when you say two, you generally start from
the
bottom and work out.
What about strip the willow, that Scottish dance? No, we're getting
A chamois leather would help you rather more.
To shine it, like that way.
It's derives from buff, which is soft leather, which was prepared originally from the skin of the buffalo, and because it was smooth and rather light-coloured, it was used figuratively as a slang term for the bare skin. I must admit, that it seems a wildly improbable story to me.
I should give a little time to think of something.
Yeah. All right, Dennis Norden, yours is easier. Debauchery.
More fun, anyway.
Yeah. Well, you know what debauchery is. You know, they're all dressed for it here tonight. You know, it's like playing Monopoly till well after midnight. It looks as though it debauchery. Is the d actually is it debauch? Is it two words actually?
It's away from.
Yeah, so really there should be a word debauchery, which means behaving absolutely properly.
Yes, they're almost, yes, you're right. You're on the right lines. There's a word called bauch. B-O-U-C-H-E.
Is it like that?
Johann Sebastian Bach.
Most improper suggestion.
Is it anything to do when they talk about debouching from a road and things like that? Is that anything to do with
debouching? Not quite, no. It is a French word.
Deboucher, to come up, yes.
That means come up, yes, out of the door, whatever it is.
I really don't know, actually. Now, I've got an idea the audience are twigging that I don't know.
I don't think I can mark you more than a half mark here. The French debauchée meant originally to entice away from duty or service in a workshop, and the French word for workshop used to be bauche, and hence the action of doing so not only away from work but towards seduction. Mm. But you had to get them away from the job first before you seduced them. Half a mark.
You wouldn't know, Dave.
How are you?
Dennis Brown, to be flabbergasted.
Well, it means to be deeply surprised.
Yes.
Flabby, meaning limp, uninteresting.
Is it aghast?
Well, I wasn't emphasizing that because the original word is ghast rather than aghast.
Ghast.
It's a verb.
It's a verb?
Yeah, was.
Verb.
In Shakespeare.
In Shakespeare. Gaspard. To be surprised.
Yes, that's right.
To gaspard.
Yes, that's right.
To gaspard.
Yes. And what does that do to you?
It makes you go flabby, yes.
It's believed to be, and I won't guarantee this, an arbitrary formation of flabby and the Shakespearean verb ghast, to astonish. So it strikes you all of a heap, or strikes you limp, wanting in backbone, and so on. Now we come to the last round, and Frank and Dennis's quotations. And the marks will be awarded on the length of the applause from the audience here in the theatre. And, Frank, your quotation, you may fool all of the people some of the time, and you can even fool some of the people all of the time, but you can never fool all of the people all the time, quite rightly, as you said, by Abe Lincoln.
I was parted from a very dear friend on Wednesday. I referred to the spot I had on my nose. He started some 15 years ago. Just a little bump, almost. Round about March, I had an idea that this year, like a cactus, he was going to flower. Now, I say that I had it off because, you know, I kept feeling it, and it was sort of heavy, and pendulous, but that isn't really true. It was vanity, of course. It always is. There's a newspaper report of 2 or 3 weeks ago discussing something I'd done on television. It said, Frank Muir, he of the wart and the pipe. And there was a letter from a lady who wrote in and said her son has got a spot like mine, and it means that girls won't bother with him. And she took him to the chemist, and he sent it to the doctor, and it didn't hurt to have it off. And since then he has. And so I trotted along to University College Hospital and asked them to have a look at it. And what I'd forgotten actually was that I'd whimsically tied a piece of pink rug wool round it, just to amuse the doctor, you see. And he was quite amused, actually. Well, he was okay, but it was the waiting room was rather full. And there was this old age pensioner with a bronchitis, and it set him off. And there was a pimply child went rigid and had to be carried out. And I suddenly remembered there's this silly thing on I tied around my face. The doctor said to come in again, and it would only take a quarter of an hour. So last Wednesday, I turned up, and they made me put on sort of dark green mob cap. A dark green mob cap on each of my feet. And then walk, sort of climb into a green overall backwards. Because for some curious reason, the opening's on the wrong side of the thing. And put a funny little dark green petrol pump attendant's hat on. And then this nurse said, go down the third door on the left and lie down the table and make yourself comfortable, and the doctor will come in. Which I did. In fact, it wasn't very easy to get comfortable because there's a sort of plate under me. And actually, I got the door wrong, and it was the ward cleaner's canteen. But I had the thing off, and suddenly I realised that I've lost my cyst, my pimple, my mark of distinction. And I suddenly realised how foolish I've been, how all through the world's history, the importance of having something distinguishable about your face has been to people. I mean, Archimedes knew this. He knew that instead of having a perfect face, if he had something that people would remember him by, he could achieve things. Remember, he said, give me one firm spot and I will move the earth. I don't know. Shakespeare had this preoccupation with little imperfections of the face. Remember, Lady Macbeth was always worrying about her complexion. Out, damn spot, out. Two Gentlemen of Verruca. Midsummer Night's Dream. Pock. Who discovered the power of steam? James Watt. In the 20th century, nursing Florence Nightingale, the lady with the lump. And in the 20th century, the arts, Maria Callas. Now I have thrown all this away just on the pretense that the thing was hurting. And like a fool, I'd forgotten a great pimple bearer, Abraham Lincoln. He had a smashing big boy. It was low down on his right cheek. And he knew what little discomfort it caused when he said, you can feel all the pimple some of the time. You can even feel some of the pimple all the time. But you can't feel all the pimple all the time.
Free lesson in physiology thrown in. Now we go on to Dennis.
And his storyline, if you remember, was Falstaff shall die of a sweat.
The most recent of my agonizing reappraisals was in respect of the suffering we inflict on ourselves in the cause of the suburban back garden. Do you know what I mean? They say to you, if you maintain your garden regularly, every day you can have something freshly cut. Do you know what that something is? Lawnmower lead. Well, it is in my case. That chap at the lawnmower service station, I reckon he's seen more of me than he has of his own children, whom I estimate I personally put through boarding school. Because it feels like every other day that I'm down with that rotten great machine humping it round there with some kind of horticultural query, like, do toes make good compost? And you get to thinking, for what? That's what I started to ask myself, because for all my trudging up and down every evening, the lawn still looks like it was written by Samuel Beckett. When you gaze down at it from the bedroom window, it resembles nothing so much as the surface of one of those old-fashioned water biscuits. Do you remember, though, they had sort of brown humps sticking up? That is my lawn. The only time that my grass looks anything at all like the bloke next door's is when we're under 4 inches of snow. It wasn't just the mowing that began rusting my soul. There was that kneeling down weeding. Now, there is an unequal battle. There's nature growing weeds 24 hours a day, and you're pulling them out 2 hours a week. What chance have you got? What is more, have you ever had a bath straight after 2 hours of weeding? It's only then that you realize that the greenness of grass is directly related to redness of face and purpleness of kneecaps. I began to realize that my lawn was turning me against my own kneecaps, which are my prettiest feature. But over and above all this physical deterioration, there was the financial rot that sets in. You know, when they say to you, you know, when people say, you've got to have green fingers to grow things, you know what makes your fingers green? It's all those pound notes you keep pulling out at the garden supply centre. Have you taken a glance recently at the prices they charge in these places? They had a bird bath in mine, and you know what they wanted for it? £27. I said to the bloke, St. Francis wouldn't pay 27. And with grass, of course, it's not just seed. There's mulch, there's fertilizer, there's nutrient. When I totted it all up, it suddenly borne in upon me that lawn is more carefully dressed than I am. And that was the moment when something within me snapped. I went into the house and I said to her, look, I said, in a societal modality where a viable lifestyle is at such variance with preconceived role conditioning, I am finally seeking self-actualization. She said, you've been reading Catherine Whitehorn. I said, All I mean is I am having that lawn taken up and a plastic one laid down. Now, gasp with revulsion all you will, it looks a treat. They call it synthetic turf. It's American, of course, and it comes in rolls like carpet. You lay it down, it stays there. There's no brown humps, There's no mulch. The only minor disadvantage about it is that when it gets wet, it rots. So every time it rains, you have to roll up the turf, bring the rolls into the house, lean them all against the dining room wall, and wait till the sun comes out again. But that is really a small price to pay, especially as it means you can hardly ever have people to dinner anymore. So there you are then, grass lovers. A lifetime of peace and indolence, just as long as you remember that one little phrase of warning that Shakespeare anticipated. False turf will die if it's wet.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, by your vote, Dennis Norden wins the story contest, but Dillis Powell and Frank Muir win the entire My Word contest on this particular evening.
Taking part in My Word were Catherine Whitehorn, Dillis Powell, Dennis Norden and Frank Muir. The chairman was Jack Longland. The questions were compiled by Peter Moore and the program was produced by Tony Schreier.
You've been listening to My Word from the BBC, heard each week at this time. This is the WFMT Fine Arts Network.